Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Jokum. Matt and Jess are joining me. Guys, how are we?
I'm good.
I'm great.
Good. Happy 4th of July, everybody out there. Hopefully we see some extra 4th of July liveries this weekend. Something similar to Rossi's Napa Auto Parts with the stars on the side there. But let's dive right into it. Let's start with the biggest topic this week, while there's not a lot, is the McLaren stuff. One report says now that McLaren's made some personnel changes, they are not going to pursue IndyCar. Other reports say, oh, hold on, and now Zach Brown has come out himself and said, well, nothing has been decided yet. So let's get everybody's hot take on McLaren and see what we think. I'll start with you, Matt. I know you and I were talking about it the other day a little bit. Has your feeling changed on McLaren at all, or are you still pretty confident in their IndyCar 2019 plans?
Still confident. I think a lot of the indications about last month in May was that Zach Brown was one of the leaders in Alonso getting to the Ready Autosport program. Zach Brown was pretty much attached at the hip with Alonso all month of May, and the prior month testing as well. Eric Boullier resigning, which when it happens the way it did at a big like team like McLaren, resigning is usually a dignified way if he got fired. I think resigning might be the way of covering that up within the media. But either way you slice it, now that Jill DeFerrin's the sporting director, who knows really? I think since Zach Brown's still in charge, it seems like McLaren likes him. The board or whoever makes the decisions above Zach Brown seems like they like him. So hopefully that means that since Zach Brown's still there, that they'll still be in good hands and on their way to IndyCar. And his report today that came out, and he said, we still haven't made a decision, contrary to others who have said it's done. To me, is a good sign. I do believe our buddy Colin Taylor did ask about that as one of our fan questions. So thanks to Colin for chiming in on Twitter. Go ahead, Jess. What do you think?
I'm still fairly confident. I think that Zach coming out and saying that it wasn't completely off the table is a good sign. I also think putting Jill DeFerrin in a position of power is a good thing for moving toward IndyCar. I just don't see them totally scrapping every plan that they had just because there's been a change in management. They'll have to just have the new managers work on some of the older plans. So I think it's still going to be a good thing. I think they're still going to, try it.
Yeah, I think I agree with both of you guys. The skepticism that came out from a guy by the name of Joe Sauer, I think it was Motorsport Week online, was the guy who was the first one to break that. Kind of seemed out of left field, and I read through a bunch of his stuff for the last couple hours, and there's not a lot of, I would say, breaking news that the man breaks. So, Mr. Colin Taylor, if you want all of our thoughts on McLaren, I too still think that they will stay. Is it, 100% done deal? No, I think there's probably still plenty that, we as fans need to worry about before we get to that point. And I still don't think it's necessarily going to be Fernando Alonso, but McLaren as a whole, yes, I still think will definitely happen. Matt, do you want to get to another fan question? I think our pal George Butts had a handful of questions this week.
Oh, you know it. Our buddy George Butts. We even started a hashtag for him, our buddy George, on Twitter. George, we always appreciate you not only listening and being a devoted fan, but for continuing to give us topics to talk about on the show, especially on slow leaks like this. And so to kind of pile on to McLaren and what Jess was saying, he wanted to know about the implications of Jill DeFerrin being the new, I think it's the either sporting director or racing director at McLaren. Thanks for that question, George. I'll go ahead and start with this. Jill DeFerrin does not have the best history of running teams. He was, to my knowledge, I think it was called Lusso Dragon DeFerrin Racing or something along those lines when Jay Penske started that team up. And I believe in 2009 DeFerrin, or 2009 or 2010, or maybe both years, DeFerrin was managing partner in some sort of capacity. And then in 2011, he attempted to start his own team and had Tony Kanaan on board. And that fell through before the 2011 season. I believe that fell through in like the winter months of 2010. And so Kanaan ended up at KV Racing for 2011 the next couple of years. So I don't know about DeFerrin as far as his ability to run that team. I'll kind of expand my thoughts on that later in the pitfall. But as far as the IndyCar aspect of it goes, it doesn't hurt to have DeFerrin kind of being the guy in charge as far as if they potentially do have an IndyCar move. You got to feel like he would be on board for that given his background. So, and I believe that was kind of what Jess was echoing. Jess, do you see any potential blind spots in their move to put DeFerrin? Do you think it would work out for not only their IndyCar program, but just McLaren as a whole?
I think it's an interesting move. Like you said, he's not got the greatest track record, but he does have a good relationship with everybody there. So that's, I think, a good foundation to start with, if not, a jumping point for him. And I am with you. I can't remember exactly what his title is. It gives him a little more power, but I don't believe he's like, you know, running the show by any stretch of the imagination. But yeah, as far as the implications for IndyCar go, I don't think it's going to hurt McLaren coming to IndyCar at all. I think it would only help, being as, you know, Jill does have a lot of the contacts, good relationship with a lot of the drivers and everything like that. I think that it would only help them. But yeah, I mean, I don't think it's necessarily guaranteeing anything, but I still think they're going to wind up in IndyCar.
Yeah, and I also think if people are wondering at home how Jill DeFerrin even entered the picture to begin with, I do believe the first time he came on board with McLaren was as like Alonso's driving coach / mentor last year in Indy. If anybody's kind of confused as to where DeFerrin came out of to begin with, and he and Alonso are actually pretty close. They came pretty close after the last month of May. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I think you guys are both right. I don't know how much of a change it's going to make to McLaren in the short term, especially with all the problems that they are currently having right now. I don't think the switch to the new engine has really worked at all. I mean, they're a little bit more competitive than they were with Honda, but I don't think too much has changed. In terms of IndyCar, does it help them? Yeah, it probably helps them at least in terms of, you know, what they need to do to get into IndyCar or, you know, strategy for sponsors or whatnot. But in terms of does it improve their chances? Maybe a little, but I don't think overall there's a huge change there. I guess we shall see. I mean, I know, you know, DeFerrin helping Alonso as driver coach or whatever his title was last year is, you know, bodes well for, you know, him at McLaren going, you know, going forward. But, you know, I guess we'll see. I'm sure, you know, McLaren mania will keep us busy every episode for probably the next I don't know, until next season starts at this point. And it's probably more exciting than any of the other manias we've talked about in the first 29 episodes so far.
Danica mania, come on.
I know, you know, I sent Jess a 4th of July gift of Danica's cookbook or workout book or whatever that was. It's a great read. I don't even know where to go with that one.
It's so good that you don't even know if it's a cookbook or a workout book.
Right. Fantastic. Right. It's, you know, I read it so quickly that I didn't know how to stop. Something like that. Moving on, we'll go with another fan question here. Matt, why don't you start? It's from Colin Taylor again, I believe.
Yeah, so I don't know if we've touched on Spencer Pigott too much on the show. Spencer Pigott is in his first full-time season in IndyCar. He's with Ed Carpenter Racing, replacing J.R. Hildebrand last year, and Hildebrand replaced Joseph Newgarden the year prior. Colin wants to know, how do you think Pigott's performance will be at Iowa compared to Joseph and JR's the last 3 years? You know, Mike puts me on the spot all the time, so Mike, we'll go ahead with you. What do you think of Pigott's chances at Iowa compared to Joseph and JR's last 3 years?
I'm not going to say he's going to win like Newgarden did 2 years ago. I'm not going to say Hildebrand finished second last year, I believe.
Yep.
But does it give him a very good baseline, you know, working with Ed Carpenter for Iowa? Sure. The last time he's run Iowa, God, it's probably been a while since Indy Lights that he ran Iowa, unless he did some testing or practices when Newgarden was hurt 2 years ago. Or wasn't Hildebrand hurt last summer too?
He was hurt for Barber, so they had Veach in.
Okay, so maybe not last year then. But 2 years ago, I know he kind of did a little bit of testing, I think. So I'll cautiously say a top 10 finish is certainly possible for him, but I don't think he's going to be contending for a win. I hope he is. You know, I think, you know, he really needs a couple, you know, strong second half of the year here. But yeah, I'm not quite sold just yet. What about you guys?
I'll go. This is weird. We're agreeing a lot tonight. I have to agree, though. I don't really see him up there competing for a win. I just can't see him having the get up and go to do the bull ring type track that Iowa is, but I could be totally wrong. It would be awesome to see. And yeah, obviously with Ed, as a teammate / owner, he's going to have, you know, the quote unquote oval expert there to help him, so that'll be nice. But I just can't see him necessarily going out and getting the win. Maybe we'll say top five.
Oh, all right. Matt, what about you?
Yeah, I'm a big Spencer Pigott guy, but I couldn't disagree with you both more. First time on the show, I think he's actually going the other direction. If you look at other than Indy, well, I guess we only have, our sample size is pretty small. Indy, they were strong as a team, other than our girl Danica Reckon.
Danica.
Pigott was surely going to get a top 10 had he not had a bad speeding penalty in the pits. And Carpenter finished second. But other than that, you know, Phoenix, they weren't that good. Or maybe Ed was, but I don't think Spencer was. And then Texas, both of them were really off pace. And given the relatively handful of cars that crashed out or had mechanical issues at Texas, they still kind of both didn't really show up in the race, other than Ed and Wiggins, but yeah, so if you're going off that, and then the test results this week where Ed wasn't really too close to the top of the field, it seems like he was Honda's up front except for the three Penske drivers. I think Piggott might be in for a rough weekend. So I think, yeah, there'll probably be a little bit of attrition, so maybe 14th or so, but I'm not too high hopeful for him. And I also don't think it's fair to compare his performance this year to, you know, whatever he does do to Newgarden and Hildebrand, because just different era, different cars. And I think comparing any driver to someone as good as Joseph Newgarden is a bit unfair to that driver, even J.R. Hildebrand last year. So I don't see it going too well for Piggott, to be honest.
Yeah, when I said cautiously optimistic about a top 10, I agree more with you, Matt, than with Jess. But it's Iowa is a tough track, and I think I'm going to pull out the stump the host card now. Actually, just in a minute here. But yeah, as I wrap up my thoughts, I think it's going to be a very Andretti power, and Andretti power, obviously, as Matt just alluded to, the testing last week definitely showed that as well. But I don't know, Piggott hasn't shown too much on any of the ovals in his career that he has run, so I'm not super confident. But with the new car, anything can happen. Who knows how the car is going to run in this tight little oval here. So we shall see. Matt, do you want to get to one more fan question before we get to the Stump the Host trivia?
Well, our buddy Falwell Power was in the show a couple weeks ago. Just real quick, he wants to know is if Iowa should be a Sunday afternoon or Saturday night race. And I think I can speak for the group when I say Saturday night. Is that fair?
Yeah, I know that might, as Will wrote on Twitter, or Faux Will wrote on Twitter, that if you put a Saturday night, maybe it hurts the TV, but drives attendance up, or you have a Sunday afternoon and the attendance is lower, but the TV numbers are up. So I go back and forth on it, but I think Saturday night would bring out the best in the racing, a great crowd, and a very good end to a 4th of July weekend or week type celebration would be a good Saturday night race in the heart of the country. What about you, Jess?
Yeah, sorry. I will also agree. Saturday night. Again, you may lose some TV viewers depending on when you start it, but I think that honestly a Sunday afternoon race, it has potential to lose viewers too, because again, everybody's trying to wrap up their holiday weekend, so they're wanting to be outside grilling and enjoying the weather. So it's kind of a 50-50, but I personally would like another night race.
Yeah, I think that's well said. Thank you, Mr. Faux Will, for the question, and hope Will Power has some better luck than he did in the last race and then in the Iowa test. All right, speaking of Iowa, let's jump into some Iowa trivia here brought to you by me. Out of the current drivers or drivers that have raced this year, there are 4 drivers that have raced in all IndyCar races at Iowa Speedway. Can you name all 4?
Well, I've been there every year. So, Jess, do you want to – I think I got the 4, but do you want to crack some off?
Tony Knon, Scott Dixon, trying to think if I don't think Will Powers raced at all of them.
He was not there in 07.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
Here, let me get you some hints. Who's our one of our least favorite drivers on the show?
Danica? Oh, wait. That's only me. Damn it. Marco.
And do you want to think about the last one?
No, go ahead and throw it out.
Well, who's the quote unquote yet verified on our Twitter poll oval specialist?
Oh, Ed.
I think Ed's done every year, right?
No, I'm sorry, Matt. You are incorrect.
What year did he not do it?
Ed has only been in 10 of the 11.
He wasn't in 2010. Crap.
Oh, I have stumped Matt, everybody.
No. The encyclopedia is burning.
Yes, encyclopedia, Dan.
Crap. It's not. Okay, let's figure out who it's not. It's not Hunter Ray, because Hunter Ray wasn't there in 07. Nope.
Hunter Ray is 10 out of 11.
Kanaan, Marco. Who else has been here forever? Dixon, we got.
So it's somebody who raced in the Indy 500, but maybe is not racing full time.
Not Serbia.
Nope. It's more obvious, or it's more obvious.
Because it's Elio, because Elio wasn't.
Yep. There you go.
Okay, because I was like thinking of current, like, oh gosh, but Elio's not really a current driver, but he technically is. Dang it. All right.
All right. Man, I stumped. I think that might have been. I was expecting Elio to be one of the easier answers, but I thought Marco would be with you guys.
I forgot Stepdad dropped his team in 2010 so that Ed didn't have a ride anymore. So, and Stepdad's Tony George, for those who don't know. So, I remember he was Panther racing in that black and gold Fuzzy's car, but I forgot that he only did like 3 races that season or something like that. Dang.
All right. Out of any driver who has raced at Iowa, who has led the most overall laps?
It's gotta be Joseph.
No. Third.
No.
394 in just 6 races.
Then TK.
Close. 523 in 11 races.
All right, so I got third and second. I know Elio's led a bunch.
Jess, you want to throw your hat in the ring here?
I'm trying to think.
It's not Dixon. Wait, is it one of the 4 we mentioned, or just anybody?
It is Elio with 644 laps led in 11 races, with 1 win, 2 top fives, 8 top tens, and 1 career pole in his 11 races at Iowa.
Well, not to toot my I hate Elio horn, but that dude knew how to start quick and fade through the field at Iowa, like nobody's business, which is kind of weird, or not weird. I would say disappointing that I got to witness his last career win, just because he didn't fade like he normally did last year, which is kind of
a bummer. Yeah, it's funny. Thank you to Racing Dash reference for the fancy stats. But Elio's average start at Iowa is 4.1, while his average finish is only 7.7. Although he did finish all 11 races on the lead lap at Iowa, it looks like. Nonetheless,
that's par for the course for Elio's career, though. I mean,
yeah.
Start up front, not finish well. That's kind of, and you know what? It was kind of another reason it was a bummer they won last year is because I was like this cosmic middle finger to Team Penske for never being able to win at that track, and so he kind of ruined that. So it's kind of a bummer.
I have a really shot in the dark trivia question here I'm going to throw in. You guys probably, Matt might get the answer because he was probably at this race. And I'll even give you the year. 2011 was the only year that Elio ran not a Team Penske or Hitachi sponsorship. Can you name the sponsor? It's very random. So if you can't get it in 10 seconds, I'm just going to give the answer.
PPG.
No.
No idea.
Penske Truck.
That was one year.
No, he said
Oh, wait, no, that's a Penske.
He said not Penske.
Yeah, well, yeah. I don't know what, if, are we talking Penske, like the black and white generic thing?
It was Guide.
Penske period, right?
Yes, thank you, Jess. It was Guide Point Systems.
Oh. Yeah, I remember that because he crashed in that car a lot because 2011 was like by far his worst year. So those are the days.
All right, let's see here. Elio 2011, he finished. Yeah, he only led 34 total laps, and his average finish was 13.6, and his average start was 10.2.
He wrecked 12 cars through the first four races, or something thereabouts, because Justin Wilson's team made a poster of all the people he wrecked and taped it to the back of his car at Sao Paulo. or maybe, yeah, I think it was Sao Paulo. They called it Elio's hit list. We'll have to tweet a picture of that.
So moving on from that, what do we want to get to next here? Do we have another fan question?
Yeah, so maybe to switch gears a little bit, and I'll have to let you guys go first because I'm going to be a little biased on this one, but Mark on Twitter at 70s rock best wants to know our opinions about Connor Daly. Do we think he's good enough to get a full-time ride? Let's see, what else did he say? You know, he said that, you know, Connor's going to be, would be a valuable marketing asset to most teams. So I guess at the end of the day, the question is he good enough to get a full-time ride? We'll put Jess on the spot for this one.
I think he is. I think it's really disappointing that he isn't in a full-time ride this year. Like he said, marketing asset for sure. But I think he is good enough, you know, talented enough, I guess, to be there full-time. Do I think he's going to go out and win every single race he gets in? No, absolutely not. But do I think that he can be competitive if he's given the right equipment? Absolutely.
I think that's fair. And I know what Matt's answer is probably going to be similar to Jess's answer. And he had a really good rookie season in his full-time season. I shouldn't say really good, but very, you know, impressive rookie season. You know, at Dale Coyne, had a couple really, really outstanding races. He really should be the guy that to run IndyCar marketing. Not saying that he doesn't deserve a ride, but he should also run IndyCar's marketing team. But I mean, I don't know. I'm not completely sold on the he deserves a full-time ride thing. I think he was, you know, this year was definitely his best Indy 500 out of the, I don't know, three he entered. I'm not, yeah, I'm going to give him a pass on the Smithfield food car entry since he caught on fire on the parade lot. There's nothing you can do about that. But, I mean, there's just some races that he, you know, I know AJ Foyt as a team was a dumpster fire last year, but some races he just looked, you know, lost and didn't know what he wanted to do with the car. So I don't know. I'm not completely sold like most people, but I think he's a great dude. And if he wants to run IndyCar's marketing team, I think it would be a great idea. So with that, I will turn it over to Matt and all the listeners who are now going to publicly shame me for that answer.
Well, anybody who's been following me on Twitter over the years knows that my least favorite word in the entire world is deserved.
Thank you.
I don't think anybody out there deserves a full-time ride. I mean, you're making it sound like Connor Daly inherently, you know, has done something to deserve a ride more than RC Enerson, Dean Stoneman, or even some of the guys on the sideline right now. Jack Harvey, technically, I mean, he's part-time and sounds like he's got a good thing going, but he's still not a full-time driver. Kyle Kaiser, some of the guys in lights, Colton Herta, Santi Arutia. To me, I don't think anybody deserves a full-time ride. They either earn it or, you know, no shame, but some guys out there just go and buy a ride. But that's their ride. I mean, they worked so they did something right off the track to get on the track. My views on Connor, obviously he and I are friends, and he's a good dude. And I think if we look a little deeper into the stats, and I'll shamelessly plug my driver ratings here that I've been doing. If you guys have been following me on Twitter, or if you have no idea what driver ratings are, and if you want to find out, feel free to message me at IndyCar_MN. That Dale Coyne team in 2015 was a train wreck. On the season, they averaged as a team a 4.1 on the rating scale, 10.0 being the highest. For baseline, a good team is about a 6.0. So for them to be 1.9 points under is terrible. And so when he jumped in that team in 2016, he had some very good results thrown in there. I mean, he did great at Watkins Glen. He did great at Mid-Ohio. He did great at Detroit, finished second, I believe. Was running sixth at Road America until his suspension broke. And I think he had a, you know, if they could have just figured out ovals and just kind of figured out how to not shoot themselves in the foot in qualifying, I think they could have really built on that really well. And then you see Bourdais coming in the next season and replace Daly. And, you know, obviously Bourdais is a champion. Nothing to take away from him, but Bourdais, you know, kind of elevated that team further. And I feel like a lot of that could be attributed to what Dale Coyne Racing did in 2016. And then he leaves for Foyt, which has always been a train wreck since I can remember, which also makes me appreciate what Takuma Sato did at that team. He had some really good results on a team that just seems like they never get it together. You know, they had a really rough season. His one highlight, though, was Gateway finished fifth. Yep. That was really cool. And then now, you know, on the sidelines, and I was very impressed with him just getting in that field, because it doesn't look like his Tom Burns racing car was good at all. Some people at the track told me that he was getting racy there at the end once he kind of maybe figured out the race setup a little better, but he was already two laps down at that point. Yeah, I mean, obviously I want to see him in IndyCar. I just wish if it came 2 years from now in the form of like a 2 or 3 race Andretti Autosport entry, that would be significantly better than him maybe jumping into a second Harding car next year. So I think if there's a lesson to be learned from his 2 full-time seasons in IndyCar, it's that buying your time and maybe going on the prowl for a sponsor that can maybe just do 3 or 4 races instead of the full $5 to $6 million to do a full season. I think that might suit him better.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think he would do very well in that, and would be better for him to go after that than a second spot on a new team like Harding. Yeah, I wouldn't be mad if he did well. You know, there might be some other drivers that, if they came through the ranks, I wouldn't really be all that excited about. But if Connor did well, I'd be excited. I just, yeah. Who knows if it'll happen. But moving on, we'll make that our – I think that's a good Twitter poll of the week leading in – or weekend or week or whatever, leading into the race Sunday afternoon at Iowa. Hashtag our buddy George had one final question. And I know we've talked about liveries off and on through all our episodes, but he wanted to know our all-time favorite out of any car. And I think I'll start so you guys have a quick second to think if you didn't see the question come in. I'm going to go with the blue and white, you know, that Greg Moore ran, and also the blue and white, you know, that the PPG scheme that Newgarden won with last year at Gateway. Both very similar. I love the blue and white combo, which is probably why I like Ed Jones' car so much this year. Shameless plug, make sure you listen to last week's episode with Ed Jones. But yeah, the Greg Moore, you know, player's car, and the PPG Newgarden car, and I guess Pagano ran it the year before too, is my all-time favorite. Jess, I'm going to put you on the spot.
I don't know if you're really putting me on the spot since you took lead, but I am going to go with a nostalgic favorite. It has little to do with the actual paint scheme. but I love Kenny Brack's power team, AJ Foytker. And it was simply because I just adored Kenny Brack. So I'm going to go with that one. As far as any of the newer ones, I love the, for lack of a better word, the sparkly paint. I think it looks amazing in the sunlight. Actually, Mike, you and I were talking about, who was it? Was it Harding Racing at the Speedway? We thought it looked really boring in pictures, and then it was so beautiful when we were actually there.
In person, that car looks 100 times different, than 100 times better than it does on TV. And I ruthlessly made fun of it leading up to the Indy 500.
But it was sparkly and it was beautiful. So I will say I like them sparkly or Kenny Brack's car.
Matt?
Yes. If anybody didn't see on Twitter, or was it on the show? I can't remember. But Mike thinks that the Harding car looks like a duck. So if anybody wants to send him like a rubber duck, I can give you my address so I can forward it to him. So that would be, maybe you can like sign it or something, or put a Harding logo on the rubber duck and send it to him. my favorite livery ever is the cool cars driven by John Stone, Frank Keady, Tracy, and like a variation of it at Indy one year in a 7-Eleven car for Michael Andretti. Even, you know, I love the 97 through 2001 version of it, but even the 2002 kart version, one, Dario ran like a blue car half the season.
Yeah.
It was blue and gray, and Tracy ran a green and gray. And my Lord, what I would have done to see those in person. Maybe I should, like, you know, if I win the lottery, I'm going to make a replica, one of those full-size replica. More recently, though, even though he's blocked me on Twitter and even though I don't like the guy or his car owner, Jay Penske, Sebastian Saavedra in 2013 ran this chrome blue and white True car.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You
know, they were empowering women by putting Sebastian Saavedra in the car. They kind of lost me there. The car was just gorgeous, but the heat the car was generating actually caused the blue chrome to explode on the track, so they had just to revert back to the normal white with the blue accents. So we only got that car for about 2 or so days, but my God, that car just looked amazing. And I was so jealous that Saavedra was the one that got to drive that for whatever it was, 2 days or something. So
was it Sebastian Bourdais that ran the red chrome McAfee car? That was pretty awesome too.
Yeah, so that was like the same. So they both kind of had these, like Saavedra just had the white and blue car all season, and Bourdais had a black and silver one up until Indy, and then they switched. And I mean, as much as Dragon Racing sucked, their cars were phenomenal looking.
Yeah, I'll get it.
Bourdais had the black and gold one his rookie season, his first season with Dragon. Dragon's rookie season. So, you know, rest in peace, Dragon. Hope Formula E is going great for you. Anyways, one topic since, thanks to our buddy George again for submitting that question. One topic I did want to kind of put you guys on the spot with is that, again, kind of reverting back to the driver ratings that I've been doing this year, one guy is having a very uncharacteristically bad year, especially given where he's at, is Simon Pagenaud. And I've tweeted a couple times, you know, usually maybe after like a qualifying session or even like a race where he doesn't do so hot, you know, I push as a time to start pushing the panic button, you know, and then I tweet like a panic button. And haven't gotten too much conversation about it, but I just wanted to know like where you guys are at as far as, you know, Power and Newgarden seem to be doing great everywhere. Do you think it's time to push the panic button on Pagenaud quite yet there this year? We'll start with Jess.
I'm actually extremely shocked with how we'll say poor. I mean, there's no other really word for how poor of a season he's having. I don't know. I feel like this is just not his year. No matter what he does, he seems to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, or, you know, his pit strategy doesn't work out or whatever. I think that he is, I don't know. I think he's good enough to be where he is, but I think that something needs to change. I don't know if it's the team around him or if he needs to get his head on right, but something needs to change.
Yeah, it's funny. Matt, thank you for putting Jess on the spot first, because it gave me time to pull up how he's actually done this season. He has 5 top 10 finishes in 10 races, but only his best finish is 8th at Texas and Road America. But
he should have finished 2nd at Texas, I think.
Yes, he led 26 laps, and then something happened. I don't remember. He finished 2nd at Texas, 14th at Road America. I was looking at the wrong.
No, you got that wrong again. Pagano finished 8th at Road America. Probably started 14th, I think.
Yes, there we go. He finished 7th. But especially at Road America, I guess it would help if I looked in the left section of Racing Reference, not the right side. But the races, even the races he's finished well, maybe outside of the Indy 500, where he was, decently competitive, but he's never really done anything all season that's been impressive outside of finishing 2nd at Texas. I don't know if at this point his confidence is just shaken, or he's maybe they're just lost with this new car and it's just not suiting his driving style, which could certainly be the case. Or maybe it's the team that's lost and they don't know how to fix it. But I do have this strange gut feeling, especially with that article, or was it in Miller's Mailbag? It was either Miller's Mailbag or Jim Aiello wrote that the only Penske driver with a contract after this year, as of now, is Newgarden. And if I'm Simon Pagenaud, I am very stressed out for the next 7 races trying to put together. And I'm not necessarily saying he has to win in these 7 races, but he needs to be more consistent in the top 5 for sure, considering he's in a Team Penske car. I don't necessarily think he might get replaced unless somebody amazing comes available, but he needs to get it going. So is it time to push the panic button? Yes, definitely. I think he really needs, it's kind of the make or break point in the season here, and his shot at a championship is probably done, but it's not too late to win some races and get your season on track. What about you, Matt?
Yeah, just to, I don't know, it's backwards compared to what he's done in his career, because he's never been bad on ovals, but he's always been absolutely stellar on road courses. And so this year he's good on ovals, 2nd at Texas. I think he did very well at Indy, didn't he? How did he finish?
He finished 6th at Indy.
Which is still, like, for double points, that's nothing wrong with that. You'll take that all day, every day. Yep. Especially since his last couple years at Penske, something's gone wrong in the race every time he's raced at Indy with Penske. So, it's just weird. And last weekend, Penske's 1-2 and Pagenaud's 14th, and it's like, what the heck is going on here? I think he'll be fine. I think he'll get it together here soon. I think Iowa is a good place for him to kind of come back and stamp his authority. I mean, he did have a good race at Road America. He did really claw his way through the field. But I think his saving grace will be that 2016 season. I think his absolute dominance that year and his ability to just dominate the field at so many races bought him a couple of years of security. And since he battled hard with Newgarden, You know, if you like compare it to a cat, I don't think he's used any of those nine lives yet. You know, I think this year though, he's using a couple. So it's definitely one of those things where if he kind of has a repeat performance of this year, next year, it's definitely something to worry about. And again, you can go back and say, you know, at St. Pete, they had the air gun issue in the pits, cost him several spots. Phoenix, he had some sort of issue in the pits, cost him spots. Long Beach got wrecked in the first corner. But then some of these other races, he's got nothing to kind of ride on. I mean, you could say maybe at Barber, the red flag and everybody got the repit or whatever kind of screwed his strategy. But I don't know if they should have gone off top or off strategy to begin with. So I'd say after Indy next year, if we haven't seen a sign of improvement, I think it's definitely panic button. Let's go get Rossi or Wickens time.
Yeah, it's funny. You look at how his average finish this year is 10.6. His first 2 years at Penske, even the year at Penske, his first year at Penske was 2016, correct? 2015. So his first year at Penske, his average finish was 10.6, which is exactly this year. But 2 years ago, it was 6.1. Last year, it was 5.3. So he's dropping back into that what's going on with Simon that we all thought a couple of years ago. But he doesn't have the it's his first year at Team Penske, excuse per se to fall back on.
Yeah, and that first season too. After Indy, they basically used him as a guinea pig for the rest of the year as like setups and whatnot for him to get more comfortable with the team and help the team out. So that first year is kind of a wash on all people's kind of accounts.
Yeah, so I think your point is fair. You know, is it time to press the panic button? In my eyes, for the season, yes. For his Penske career, career is the right word there. Maybe not, but nonetheless, we shall see. I think Penske, I'm sure, will end up strong at Iowa. I don't know if there's a race that Penske has, at least one Penske car hasn't been strong at this year. Jess, I know you had something you wanted to bring up as well.
Yeah, so I have read a few places this rumor. And I just kind of want to get you guys' opinion on it, and I'll give mine. A couple years ago, Liberty Media came and met with IndyCar. They were interested in purchasing IndyCar, and obviously that did not happen. They went on to buy F1, and it turned out, you know, fairly well for them. As it turns out, Liberty Media has been in Indy. It appears that they've been there to talk about IndyCar again, purchasing it. However, this time they want the Speedway also. So what do you guys think? Do you think they have a chance at getting, first of all, IndyCar, second of all, the Speedway? And if that happens, what do you think that means for IndyCar?
I'll let Matt start.
Bugger.
I'll go first if you want me to.
No, that's fine. I got it. I guess kind of I'm trying to think of how to phrase it, because without the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the IndyCar season or series in Tony George's hands, what else would he do to stroke his ego? find something else to do. And I don't know what exactly he would do. I don't know. I was one of these guys who didn't like Bernie Ecclestone. But as much as I didn't like him, you know, he made, you know, like F1 was the pinnacle. And I'm not saying they're not the pinnacle anymore, but their races are garbage this season. And at the end of the day, if you don't put on a good on-track product, then what's the point? But Liberty has done a few things right. Not their schedule. I think if they keep doing this nonsense of trying to go to like Miami and Las Vegas and other weird cities like that instead of just, you know, the best race courses in the world, I think it's a little weird. But their ability to understand that, you know, hey, we have all these fans, let's try to open up to the commoner instead of the elitists in the world. I know they didn't have the best weekend last weekend with the French Grand Prix, but other than that, you know, they're trying to get driver interviews immediately after the race, or trying to open up drivers for more autographs. let's see. But at the end of the day, I wouldn't want them anywhere near IndyCar. And I don't go up to bat for Tony George too often, but the Holman company as a whole, hiring Mark Miles, who then hired Jay Fry, is the most refreshing thing that's happened in the last, I don't know, I've only been a fan since like 05, 06. So in my lifetime, it's the most refreshing thing that's happened. I don't know about you guys. You guys have been a fan longer than I have, but I wouldn't want Liberty Media anywhere near the Speedway or the series. What about you, Mike?
Yeah, taking a step back, I did want to humble brag that I did get to see that Team Cool Green car in person at Nazareth when I was a little child.
Put me on the spot, bragging.
Yeah. It's okay. You're going to have people send rubber ducks to my house. man, I don't know. My gut says IndyCar needs to stay far, 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 far away from this. But like you said, they've done some things right. Getting the ESPN deal, and I know it's, practically just giving it to ESPN for free. But at least it's getting it on people's TVs. But their on-track product is just so boring this year. I don't even think the French Grand Prix was that exciting of a race. I don't know. I definitely am not for buying the Speedway. I get very nervous with some billionaire who doesn't understand anything about IndyCar to just come in and not only run the series, but then run, Indianapolis and the Indy 500 and everything that goes into it. I'm not sure. Now, if they want to be the new title sponsor, I'm for that, and they can have some input that way and help out with TV, sure. But I'm going to vote no as well. I just too many things in F1 this year, especially on track, that would make me nervous about putting IndyCar in somebody else's hands. Because like Matt said, in Jay Fry we trust.
Jess? Okay, my turn. I want to keep Jay Fry, so let's start there because, yes, in Jay Fry we trust. I would be okay, I think, with them buying the series. Buying the Speedway, absolutely not. But as far as some of the comments you guys made, I think it's actually a good thing that they want to quote unquote go to those weird series, Matt, or those weird cities, Matt. I think that, if they could get a race in Vegas or Miami, it would draw eyeballs here, get people to be interested again. And I can't blame Liberty Media for the on-track product entirely. A lot of it is the ridiculous race cars. how many winglets do we need? So I can't blame them entirely for that. Yes, they allowed the rule book to be what it is that allows all of that craziness, but that's always been F1. They want to push the envelope, they want to have the technology, they want to do this and that, and I get it. So I think they need to work on the fine line there between letting the teams push the envelope and getting the on-track product to be better. And I think there is some place in the middle where they could meet and get good racing again. I don't think it's totally a wash. So as far as them running the series, I would be okay with it as long as they would be okay with keeping, some of the people and going from there, not come in and like totally wipe out everybody, nobody stays kind of thing, which I don't think they did that in F1. I could be wrong. They could have wiped out everybody, but I think they kept some of the management team in place who had been there, who understood, the racing and the fan base. But yeah, as far as the Speedway goes, nope, please don't touch that. Leave that in the Holman family, please.
Yeah.
So going back real quick, could you explain further about them being okay to buy the IndyCar series? What do you mean?
Like, I would be okay with them purchasing the series, but I don't want them to purchase.
Is there a reason for that, or is that just like as far as buying the series as a whole?
Oh, I thought I just explained it.
No, I thought. Well, I thought because of what your argument was about IndyCar or the Indianapolis 500. I thought, but.
Oh no! I just said everything about what they've done in F1 that I'm okay with.
Okay.
I just don't want them to come in and totally wipe out everything that IndyCar's done, but I would be okay. I mean, they are working toward a more fan-friendly F1 feel. I would be fine with them doing that. I mean, I think IndyCar is obviously already pretty fan-friendly anyways, but if they have ideas to make it more so, that'd be great. But like I said, I don't think that they are entirely to blame for F1's downfalls, and I think it's kind of unfair to blame them for all of it.
Yeah,
you know, they kind of bought a poop show, and they're trying to make it a little bit better year by year.
That's Jess's PG-13 version of that.
Yeah, iTunes thanks Jess. Yes. iTunes thanks Jess for that. You know, it's a good point. You know, I don't know whether it is Liberty Media's urging or you know, the FIA, you know, management team or however that's structured. But you bring up a good point in, I guess, kind of, you know, what both of you said in terms of you know, on track versus not on track, and you know, F1 adding a third DRS zone this weekend at the British Grand Prix in Silverstone. It starts at the start finish line and goes through like the windy portion of, you know, maybe turn one and turn two. It's the fast right left Abbey and farm sequence. Thank you.
I was going to say, F1 fans are going to get you for that. The little windy bit.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You know, I'm not trying to make fun of F1 in that poor wording. But even Sebastian Vettel said, listen, the top two or three teams might be fine because they have good cars and good downforce and you know, everything's set up well, but it really might pull the field apart because you might have a team McLaren who had admitted this morning that they're 2018 car actually produces less downforce than last year, which is impressive because, like Jess says, it had F1 cars have 17,000 winglets, and I don't think that's an exaggeration. So yeah, it's definitely not a step in the right direction, but I guess we'll see there. And I'm actually going to change my pitfall on the fly now that I'm looking at motorsport.com here. but we'll get to that in a minute. Guys, is there any topics or fan questions we need to get to before our pitfalls this week?
I don't have any more.
If anybody's curious, Danica Patrick did finish fourth in the 2002 Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach Celebrity Race, if anybody's wondering.
Thank you, Matt.
Fantastic.
I'm sure Jess is going to put that on her refrigerator.
I'm going to write that one down so I remember.
Yep. With that, you know, again, thank you to SoundCue Audio for, their continued sponsorship. I am recording this episode with SoundCue headphones, and they are fantastic. Pretty soon we'll have a Pit Lane Parlay code to use on their website. It'll get you entered to win pit paddock passes, a t-shirt, maybe some sort of headphone discount or something. Who knows? But that's a couple weeks away. You know, thank you again to my buddy Marty Davis and Turf Monkey Lawn Care, and remember to listen on wildfireradio.com. There's some pretty cool things coming out in the Wildfire Sports Network in the next probably 6 weeks or so. So with that, now that I've gotten all the fun stuff out of the way with, Jess, it is not time to end the episode.
Are you sure? I could do it again.
Yeah, we could. But because of that, Jess, you are going to have to start the pitfalls off.
Okay, and this time I promise I won't just like randomly sign it off. My bad on that one. Anyway, so this week my pitfall is actually a pitfall. I'm not going to praise somebody, so just as an FYI. I'm going to pitfall IndyCar's little panel display thing because, well, they're not back. They were supposed to be back this month. They're saying that they won't be here for at least two more races and possibly indefinitely. excuse me. The company who does them is a whole bunch of letters, and I can't remember what they are. they are having issues in testing, cannot fix the problem. And it's really disappointing. They're the company who produced the old displays, and they worked fairly well. But the new ones were having issues. IndyCar required them to be removed from all the cars, and it doesn't look super promising that they're coming back, even though they were like amazing. So I'm pretty disappointed in that. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, you know, it's disappointing, and you know, probably the good call on IndyCar to pull them off with all the problems they were apparently having in testing, and being in the software world during the day and doing all the technical stuff for the show. I understand it's a real pain to fix software glitches when they're not working right. But I don't understand why it's now taken almost 2 months. I just feel like, you know, maybe there's more problems behind the scenes that we don't know about, or maybe I don't know. I don't even know what they're doing, so I don't even know what to think. But yeah, I'm with you on this one. It's disappointing because they were awesome to look at. And you know, they were super functional for a casual fan or for a hardcore fan. So, very disappointing on whatever, you know, company that builds those panels and the software behind them to, you know, tease us for the first four races of the year and then, you know, have all sorts of software issues. I don't know if Matt disagrees or if we can turn it over to Matt for his pitfall.
Yeah, I'm disappointed. I think they may have tried to go, well, I don't know if it's just the build of it or if they try to get a little too fancy. I mean, I don't think a fan needs to see, you know, Marco Andretti's LED display light up into a middle finger every time he's upset with somebody.
Yeah, it'd be a picture of Ludacris.
Yeah, that's an exaggeration, but still, like, you know, we saw like some displays where it was like the American flag or something. Like, that's cool and all, but like, you know, its functional purpose is just to show position and push to pass and pit stop time. So I don't know why it had to get super fancy. It's more for a practical thing and not a fashion display per se.
But we don't know if that's why there was issues.
That's true. That's true.
No. The article that came out earlier today or yesterday, I can't remember. It basically was not a software problem. It had something to do with the actual wear on the display because of the 200 mile an hour winds that it was having to deal with.
Okay.
I don't know if that's just like a problem.
Something with the vibration or something. I obviously it's very technical. I don't really know, but something to do with the wind. And anyways, they weren't holding up the way they wanted. I'm not sure if they were posing a threat of maybe coming off the cars or if it was something like that. I'm not really sure, but it was something to do with the wear and tear on them with the 200 mile an hour winds.
Yeah. And Mike and I have both wholly admitted on the show that we're not engineers, But if the new IndyCar engine that's coming out in a couple of years is basically 0.2 liters bigger, but he's going to generate 200 more horsepower, one would think they could just slap the old LEDs onto the new car. But I guess, like, I'm not an expert on that per se.
Yeah.
I think that was also fair. In the article.
They couldn't do that?
No, they can't do that because the roll bar where the display was is actually quite a bit smaller than it was previously. So it the holes on the display versus where they screwed in were not lining up or whatever. They did try it. It didn't work.
Good to know. All right. Fair enough.
This is why I stay away from the engineer stuff.
Yeah. I'll take a shot second here. Mine's probably going to be quick. I changed it up versus what we talked about before. I am going to pitfall the new NASCAR Xfinity Toyota Supra. So Toyota Supra, you know, cool looking car, especially for, you know, probably the three of us growing up. I know I wanted one when I turned 16 and got my license. I did not get one. I got a Toyota Corolla, but we'll save that pitfalling my parents for, you know, maybe some sort of off-season episode. But this Toyota Supra NASCAR is pretty much just like an Xfinity car with like a few extra curves in the hood. So as our buddy Will Faux Will Power eloquently said on Twitter about 2 hours ago, Honda might as well brand its Indy car as a 2019 Civic Type R if this is how things work nowadays in motorsport. And that might be the most accurate tweet I've seen all day. The Toyota Supra also came out with some sort of sports car racing version a couple weeks ago or a couple months ago, and it looked awesome, fantastically done. But this Toyota Super NASCAR is awful. It's ugly. I don't understand what NASCAR is thinking with this one. I think I can guess that you guys are probably going to agree with me on this one, so we can just jump right into Matt. Unless you guys want to disagree with me.
No, I think NASCARs in general are hideous, and Jess says no.
Yep.
So, I'll jump right into mine, and I'll just call like I see it. Now that Eric Boullier is fired, we just got to look at what he did at McLaren. And to be honest, I'm not too sure. And I do that, you know, yanking my collar back with my finger, because looking just black and white, the constructor points when he took over in 2014, they finished fifth, and then it was ninth, and then sixth, and then ninth, and then right now they're sixth. And for a team like McLaren with their history, I know there's stuff that, you know, he can't control. You know, they never had a title sponsor under his reign, which is not his department. But just from like a technical aspect and hiring the right people to build the best car, obviously they fell short somewhere. Because these kind of results, I mean, if I scroll through McLaren's history here real quick, they've never had a stretch this bad. In there, well, if they cap off, if the year is going the way it is for their team, they haven't had a stretch this bad ever. They kind of did go through a rough constructor's spell between 78 to 81, but nothing like this. So, and they're at the back of the grid, and it's sad to watch because I still root for them. If there is a team, I'll just watch F1. McLaren's a team I'd root for, but it's kind of good to see him go because they obviously aren't doing something right, and hopefully we touched on Baron. I don't know how well he's going to do, but it's good just to get some fresh blood to see if something can change.
Yeah, I think you said that one well. I don't know if Jess agrees or disagrees, but I think, yeah, it was time for a change, and Eric did diddly squat in his time at McLaren. And with that, unless you guys have anything else, we are rounding up just over an hour here. Jess, I can assure you, you are safe to sign it off if you would like to.
Gonna do this thing. All right. Okay. And guys, keep your lug nuts tight.